The Santa Barbara Theater of the Air presents George Backman, Jason Campbell, Gretchen Evans, and Sylvia Short in A Song at Twilight by Noel Coward. We are in a private suite in a luxurious hotel in Switzerland, occupied by Sir Hugo Latimer, a writer of considerable eminence, and his wife of 20 years, Hilda Latimer. Hilda, originally Sir Hugo's secretary and now his official German translator, is seated at a writing desk and speaking to the floor waiter, Felix, a startlingly handsome young man of about 28.
That will be all for the moment, Felix. Sir Hugo's guest is due at 8 o'clock, but it is possible that she might be a little late, so I think you should be prepared to serve the dinner at about 8:30, but not before.
A touch of garlic in the salad dressing as usual.
Yes, but only the smallest touch. We don't want a repetition of last Friday, do we?
Friday night is much to be regretted, m'lady. But if you will remember, I was off duty. Giovanni is a most willing boy, but he is not yet accustomed to Sir Hugo's tastes.
Well, you will warn him to be more careful next time.
Very good, m'lady.
Allô, mademoiselle? J'ai demandé un préavis à Londres il y a presque demi-heure. Est-ce que vous en avez des nouvelles? Oui, oui, merci, j'attendrai. What did I do with that file? Ah, here it is. Hello? Is that you, Carl? This is Hilda Latimer speaking. I have been trying to get you all the afternoon. Now, first of all, regarding the lecture tour in the States. Yes, I know, but Sir Hugo really isn't up to it. Oh, yes, he is much better, but the doctor insists that he must not undertake anything that is not absolutely necessary. Yes, he will accept the doctorate at the university and make a speech as arranged, but nothing more than that. After it's over, we will either come straight back here or go to Arizona for a rest. Next, regarding the film proposition for The Winding River, you will have to put in the contract that he has complete veto on the script and the adapter. Well, he certainly won't sign it unless that is confirmed in writing. On the contrary, I think it matters a great deal. It involves his name and his reputation.
What involves my name and reputation?
It's Carl. We're talking about the Winding River contract.
Well, then you are both wasting your time. I have no intention of signing at whatever concessions they make.
But Hugo, dear, you did say that providing they gave you complete veto of script and adapter...
Well, I have changed my mind. I have had no less than 3 novels and 5 of my best short stories massacred by that cretinous medium. I refuse to have any more of it.
I can't talk any more at the moment, Carl. Ring me in the morning at 11 o'clock. Very well, 10 o'clock. But be sure to have it put through to my room. Yes, 355.
Carl's getting out of hand. He needs a serious talking to. All he thinks about is his damned percentage.
You can't altogether blame him for that. He is your agent.
What time is it?
It's nearly 7:30. Isn't that clock on the mantel going?
I haven't the faintest idea. It's so exquisitely made that I can't see it without my glasses.
You said you were delighted with it when I gave it
to you. Well, I'm not now.
I'm sorry. I'll try and change it.
And please, don't look martyred. It draws your mouth down at the corners like a weary old camel.
Thank you.
With 2 unsymmetrical humps.
That's a dromedary. Have you had your bath?
No. I've not had my bath.
Well, don't you think you should? She's due at 8 o'clock.
If I'm not ready, she can wait for me, can't she? An extra 10 minutes tacked onto all those years can't matter all that much.
You're in a very disagreeable mood.
I'm nervous.
It's your own fault if you are. You needn't have agreed to see her. And in fact, I still think it is a great mistake.
Yes, I know you do. You've made that abundantly clear during the last 3 days. You've never been exactly adept at hiding your feelings.
On the contrary, Hugo, that is one of the things I do best. Living with you for 20 years has been excellent training.
Why are you so frightened of Carlotta?
I am not in the least frightened of Carlotta.
Oh, yes, you are. The very idea of her fills your soul with dread. Come on now, admit it.
It is time for your blue pill.
You'd better take a tranquilizer to calm your desperate fears.
Whatever fears I may have about Carlotta are entirely on your account. She's bound to upset you in some way or other. She wouldn't suddenly reappear in your life like this unless she wanted something. Here you are. Take your pill.
Perhaps she wants a reunion.
Money, more likely. She's not been very successful during the last 15 years.
Have you been following her career?
There hasn't been much career to follow lately.
Poor Carlotta.
She will upset you. I feel it in my bones. It is like the weather. I can always tell when it is going to rain.
That particular form of prescience is rheumatic rather than clairvoyant. In any case, it is within the bounds of possibility that I might upset her.
She doesn't suffer from your particular form of nervous indigestion.
I see you're determined to be tiresome.
It is unfair of you to say that. It's you I'm thinking of. You've been so much better lately. Dr. Benoit says your blood pressure is back to normal. You're sleeping well and you haven't had any pains for 3 weeks. I just don't want you to have a relapse. You know that any sort of excitement is bad for you.
Do you seriously believe that seeing Carlotta again will excite me to the extent of sending up my blood pressure?
You've been giving every indication of it.
Oh, Hilda. Hilda, what an egregious ass you are.
You have now called me a camel, a dromedary, and an ass within the last 10 minutes. Your normal dialogue is less zoological. You have worked yourself up into a state about seeing Carlotta again, and it's no use pretending you haven't. I know the symptoms. I haven't been with you for 20 years for nothing.
Now listen to me, Hilda. My affair with Carlotta lasted exactly 2 years, and we parted in a blaze of mutual acrimony. That was centuries ago, and I haven't clapped eyes on her since, except once on the cinema screen when she appeared briefly as a mother superior in an excruciatingly bad film about a nun with a vast bust. Nor have we corresponded. This sudden request on her part to see me again has not unnaturally filled me with curiosity. It is quite possible that your surmise is right, and that she wants to borrow money. If that is so, I will lend her some for old time's sake. On the other hand, she may merely want to see me for sentimental reasons. Time and the difficult years may have mellowed her. Or she may even wish to gloat over my age and infirmity.
You are not infirm.
After all, you must remember that she was very much in love with me.
And you with her?
Of course. Even so, the chances of a passionate physical reunion are remote.
So I should hope. The very idea would be ridiculous.
Not quite so ridiculous as all that. Anyhow, you cannot deny the possibility crossed your mind.
I most certainly do deny it.
Quite frankly, I suspect you of being jealous.
No, Hugo, I am not jealous. I realized many years ago that I had no right to be jealous.
Since when has jealousy been so law-abiding? Is it an emotion that obediently sticks to the rules?
I have no wish to argue with you.
You're jealous of all my friends, of anyone who is close to me, and you always have been.
You have not so many friends for me to be jealous of.
You hate Mariette. You are barely civil to Cedric Markham and David when they come here.
They are barely civil to me.
Cedric Markham is a man of brilliant intelligence and exquisite taste. He is also the greatest connoisseur of modern art alive today.
And what is David?
David is one of the most promising young painters that England has produced in the last 20 years. He also happens to be the son of Lord Tenterden.
In that case, he should have better manners. And his paintings I do not care for at all. They are ugly and cruel.
As a full-blooded German, you are scarcely in a position to object to cruelty in art or anything else.
It is wrong of you to speak to me like that, Hugo, and most unkind. When you are in a better mood, you will see that this is so and be sorry. In any case, this sort of argument is waste of time and energy. You cannot, after all these long years, seriously imagine that I am jealous of your friends or your heart. If I am jealous at all, it is for your well-being. You really must not try to get cross so easily. You know what it does to your assets. Remember what Dr. Benoit said?
Now you're talking like a district nurse.
No district nurse would have had the endurance to put up with your sudden tempers for as long as I have.
Do you wish to leave me? Are you giving me a month's notice?
If I wished to leave you, I should have done so long ago. Now it is too late.
For God's sake, stop looking hurt, Hilda. It infuriates me.
If you do not wish me to look hurt, You should not try so hard to hurt me. I do my best to help you with the business of your life, even to love you as far as you will allow me to. But you make it most difficult for me, sometimes almost too difficult to be borne.
Oh, Lord, now I suppose you are going to cry.
No, Hugo, I am not going to cry. That, too, is waste of time and energy. I am going to put on my hat.
Hilda.
If you are determined to receive your long-lost love in a dressing gown with your hair all rumpled, that is entirely your affair.
Hilda, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I upset you.
It is nothing new.
I don't feel now that I can face her alone. You'd better stay after all.
Certainly not. I've already arranged to dine with Liesel at the Grapp d'Or and go to the cinema afterwards.
Liesel is a weather-beaten old lesbian.
She is also highly intelligent.
Is she in love with you?
Not in the least. She lives with a Chinese student who paints butterflies on glass.
Whatever for?
Actually, she's very talented.
Put Liesel off. Don't go. Stay with me. I need your support.
No, Hugo. You've brought this situation on yourself, and you will have to deal with it yourself.
You have ordered the dinner?
Yes. Felix will bring it when you ring.
I think I should like a drink to fortify me.
I'll ring for some ice. It had better be vodka. You're having it with the caviar, anyhow.
I never told you to order caviar.
No, it was my own idea. I ordered pink champagne, too.
Pink champagne? Good God, why?
You're always accusing me of not having a sense of humour. I thought I'd like to prove you wrong.
Is the rest of the menu equally plutocratic?
No, comparatively simple. Steak béarnaise, green salad, and a chocolate soufflé.
I shan't sleep a wink.
I shouldn't count too much on that, anyhow. The Maalox tablets are in the table drawer if you should need them. Oh, Felix. Give Sir Hugo a vodka on the rocks, will you?
Very good, my lady.
I won't be more than a few minutes.
I missed you sadly last evening, Felix. Where did you disappear to?
It was my half-day off, sir.
Your substitute lacked charm. He also breathed like an old locomotive.
That was Giovanni, sir. He comes from Calabria.
The railway journey must have made a profound impression on him.
Your vodka, sir.
Thank you. Did you enjoy your half day off?
Oh, yes, sir. We went to swim in the piscine at Vevey. It is not so crowded as the one here, and then we came back and went to a film.
We?
My friend and I. He is the assistant barman at the Hotel de la Paix. He's a champion swimmer and has won many trophies.
You look as though you should be a good swimmer yourself with those shoulders.
Not as good as he, but I myself love to water ski. It is a great sport.
It must be. Water skiing was not invented when I was your age. Oh, here comes Hilda. Thank you, Felix. You will bring the dinner when I ring.
Very good, sir.
It should be in about half an hour's time, depending on when my guest arrives.
Bien, monsieur.
Are you feeling more relaxed?
More resigned, at any rate. That's quite a masculine-looking little hat, almost a bowler. Are you wearing it as a subtle gesture to your hostess?
You know I dislike that sort of joke, Hugo. Liesel has been a good friend of mine for many years. I am very fond of her. The other side of her life is of no interest to
me. Give me a cigarette.
No, Hugo, you've already had too many.
I tell you, I'm nervous. There now.
Oui, Gaston. Demandez à madame. Demandez tout de suite.
That tiresome woman is early.
No, it is you who are late. Now go quickly. It would be inelegant to receive an ex-mistress in your dressing gown, however old she is. I will talk to her until you are ready. Go along.
Promise me you'll cut the cinema and come straight back here after dinner.
That all depends. I'll think about it. Go along. Hurry. I am Hilda Latimer. How do you do?
How do you do? I recognize your voice. You were so kind on the telephone.
My husband is dressing. He won't be more than a few minutes. Please, be so kind as to sit down and take a cigarette if you should care to smoke. They are in that tortoiseshell box. Would you care for a drink?
Perhaps not quite yet. I would rather wait a little. How is he? Hugo, Sir Hugo.
Well, he is almost completely well again. He has, of course, to take care not to overdo things and not to become agitated or unduly excited.
He has certainly had a wonderful career. It wouldn't be surprising if he sometimes found the burden of his eminence a trifle nerve-wracking.
Nerve-wracking?
Well, the continual demands made upon his time. The constant strain of having to live up to the self-created image he has implanted in the public mind. How fortunate he is to have you to protect him.
He isn't, I think, in quite such urgent need of protection as you imagine.
Ah, you've been married for 20 years, haven't you?
Yes. He engaged me as his secretary in January 1945, and a few months later we were married.
Oh, I remember the headlines. It caused quite a sensation.
Yes, I know it did. There was much foolishness written in the papers.
How does he feel about seeing me again, after so long?
I cannot say. He is curious, naturally.
And you? What are your reactions to this rather peculiar situation?
I have no feelings about it one way or the other.
I will accept the snub, but I am not entirely convinced by it.
It was not intended to be a snub. You will please forgive me.
There's nothing whatever to forgive. I find it perfectly understandable that you should be suspicious of me. It is the duty of even the kindest protective dragons to be wary of strangers. It is sad that we did not meet in earlier different circumstances. We might have been friends.
Thank you, Miss Gray.
Hugo! Oh, what a strange moment this is, isn't it? I had planned so many things to say, and now they've gone clean out of my head. Do we embrace?
Why not?
How well you look. Slim as ever and so distinguished. White hair definitely becomes you.
The years seem to have forgotten you, Carlotta.
Oh, no, my dear. It isn't that they've forgotten me. It is that I have remembered them and taken the right precautions.
You and Hilda have already made friends, I see.
Yes. As a matter of fact, we have. It's been puzzling me where I could have seen you before, but now I remember. There's a photograph of you in Hugo's autobiography. You are leaning against a sort of pillar and shading your eyes with your hand as though you were worried about the weather.
The sort of pillar was one of the columns of the Parthenon.
The light was very strong.
Lass, there is no photograph of me in the book, at least only a verbal one. The light was a little strong in that, too.
Can I offer you a drink?
Oh, yes, by all means. I should love one.
Whiskey, brandy, gin, vodka.
Vodka, please, on the rocks. I expected you to look much older. But that's beside the point nowadays, isn't it? I mean, people hardly ever look their real age anymore. Time is learning to accept a few defeats. It's rather fun frustrating the old monster.
Your vodka, Miss Gray.
Thank you so much.
I'm afraid I must leave you now. I have a dinner engagement.
Oh, how disappointing. I'd hope to get to know you better.
We shall probably meet again.
Of course. We're almost bound to. I've moved into this hotel.
Oh.
Don't be alarmed. I shall only be here for a few days. I am having a series of injections at the clinique, and it's more convenient to be here than in Vevey.
Au revoir, Miss Gray.
A bientôt, Lady Latimer. How lovely it is with the lights glittering in the distance. I went over to Evian the other evening on the little steamer and won nearly 1,000 francs.
Can you afford to play so high?
Oh, yes. I have a certain amount put by. I also still get alimony from my last husband.
Have you had many others?
2 before this one. They both died. 1 in an air crash and the other in the war.
Did you love them?
Oh, yes. I shouldn't have married them if I hadn't.
Are you any children?
Yes. I had a son by my second husband. He's 24 now and very attractive. You'd love him. Am I to drink alone?
Too much alcohol is bad for me.
Too much alcohol is bad for everyone. Just pour yourself a teeny-weeny one to keep me company.
Really, Carlotta, you're too absurd.
She's nice, your wife. I like her.
I'm so glad.
In spite of the fact that she doesn't care for me much. I don't think you quite did her justice in your book. But then you weren't very nice about anybody in your book, were you?
You were under no obligation to read it.
There was no warning on the cover. You take a fairly jaundiced view of your fellow creatures, don't you, on the whole?
Perhaps I prefer to see people as they are, rather than as more sentimental minds would wish them to be. However, I am a commentator, not a moralist. I state no preferences.
Admirable.
I would hate you to imagine that I am unaware of the mocking expression in your eye.
Oh, don't worry. I would never suspect you of missing a trick. Except, perhaps, the most important one of all.
And what might that be?
The knack of discovering the best in people's characters instead of the worst.
Without wishing to undermine your radiant self-confidence, I must break it to you that that has been said often before, usually by ardent lady journalists.
One, two, and through the vorpal blade went snicker-snack.
My dear Carlotta, I had no idea you had such a thorough grounding in the classics. You were virtually illiterate when we first met.
It was you who set my stumbling feet upon the path of literature, Hugo. It was you who opened my eyes to many wonders.
Don't talk such nonsense.
You worked assiduously on my virgin mind. And now I come to think of it, you didn't do so badly with my virgin body.
Please, don't talk like that, Carlotta. I find it distasteful.
Try not to be so easily cross with me. It's almost too reminiscent. You always told me I was vulgar, according to your lights, that is. But your lights are so bright and highly placed that they bring out the bags under my eyes and the gutter snipe in my character. They always did and they always will. There's nothing really I can do about it. Except perhaps go away. Would you like me to go away now, this very minute? I promise I will if you truly want me to. You don't even have to answer. A valedictory nod will be enough.
Of course I don't want you to go away. With all my faults and in spite of my jaundiced view of my fellow creatures, I am seldom discourteous.
I would like it to be something warmer than your courtesy that wishes me to stay.
I fear I can offer you little more at the moment, Carlotta, except perhaps curiosity, which is even less complimentary. I am what is called set in my ways, which at my age is not entirely to be wondered at.
It implies resignation.
Resignation has much to recommend it. Dignity, for one thing, a quality, alas, that is fast disappearing from our world.
I think I know what you're up to.
I am open to any suggestions.
You are remodeling your public image. The witty, cynical author of so many bestsellers is making way for the grand old man of letters.
Supposing your surmise to be accurate, do you consider such a transition reprehensible?
Of course not, if the process is inevitable and necessary. But aren't you jumping the gun a little?
No, Carlotta, I am not jumping the gun or grasping time by the forelock or rushing my fences.
You must be prepared for a few clichés if you invite a retired actress to dinner.
I am merely accepting, without undue dismay, the fact of my own mortality. I am an old man, and I at least have the sense to realize it.
Don't be waspish, my dear, just as we were getting along so nicely. At least you can congratulate yourself on having had a fabulously successful career. How wonderful to have been able to entertain and amuse so many millions of people for such a long time. No wonder you got a knighthood.
I begin to suspect that you are here as an enemy. I hoped for a friend.
Did you, Hugo? Did you really?
Perhaps I was wrong.
Why did you write so unkindly about me in your memoirs?
Aha. Now I'm beginning to understand.
Oh, no, you're not. You're merely jumping to conclusions. That was always one of your most glaring defects.
Why can't we concentrate for a moment on some of my glaring assets? It might lighten the atmosphere.
We will, when you've answered my question.
My autobiography was the assessment of the events and experiences of my life up to the date of writing it. I endeavored to be as objective and truthful as possible. If in the process I happened to hurt your feelings, I apologize. There was no unkindness intended. I merely wrote what I thought to be true.
Your book may have been an assessment of the outward experiences of your life, but I cannot feel that you were entirely honest about your inner ones.
Why should I be? My inner feelings are my own affair.
In that case, the book was sailing under false colors.
And all this because I described you as a mediocre actress.
You don't happen to have any parchment lying about, do you?
Parchment?
Yes. When zoological experts extract the venom from snakes, they force them to bite on parchment.
Ha ha. I accept your rebuke.
How generous of you.
It's curious that you should still be able to arouse hostility in me.
Not really. As a matter of fact, it was always there, just below the surface.
When two young people are passionately in love, a certain amount of bickering is inevitable. It even has charm, up to a point. But when the old indulge in it, it is merely tiresome.
Speak for yourself. You are the one who has decided to be old. I haven't yet. Maybe I never shall. Some people remain young until they're 90.
You see no point in dignified withdrawal, in growing old gracefully.
There is little grace in growing old, Hugo. It's a dreary process that we all have to deal with in our different ways. To outside observers, my way may seem stupid and garish, and later on perhaps even grotesque. But the opinion of outside observers has never troubled me unduly. I am really only accountable to myself. I like slapping on the makeup and having my body massaged and my hair tinted. You've no idea how much I enjoy my long, complicated mornings. I admit I'm liable to cave in a bit by the late afternoon, but a short snooze fixes that, and then I have all the fun of getting ready again for the evening.
And does the evening really justify so much effort?
As a general rule, yes. I have many friends. Some of them quite young. They seem to enjoy my company. I like to watch them dancing.
I detest the young of today. They are grubby, undisciplined, and ill-mannered. They also make far too much noise.
The young always make too much noise. Many of the ones I know are better informed and more intelligent than we were. Also, their world is more shrill than ours was. You really must make allowances.
I'm too old to make allowances.
Oh, Hugo, you are positively stampeding toward the quiet grave, aren't you?
Shall we change the subject? Shall we try to discover some general theme on which we can both agree?
Your indestructible elegance is flustering me and making me talk too much.
You always talk too much, Carlotta.
Ah, yes. It's a compulsive disease. Useful at dinner parties, but fatal in the home.
As this is neither, you can afford to relax.
There's so much I want to know about you, about what's happened to you during these long years, and here I am talking you into the ground. Will you forgive me?
Why is there so much that you want to know about me? Why are you so suddenly curious about what has happened to me during these long years? Some motive must have impelled you to come here. Some spark must have been struck. What is it you want of me?
At the moment, dinner.
Carlotta.
I only had a salad for lunch and I'm famished.
Very well, have it your own way. I am prepared to play any game you wish to play, up to a point. But do remember, won't you, that I tire easily. The dinner is ordered, anyhow. I even remembered that you liked caviar.
Oh, that was sweet of you. The first time I ever tasted it was with you. You took me to Ciro's for supper after the show.
Was I still wooing you then, or had I won?
You'd already won, more or less. But I think the caviar clinched it. I can remember what we had after the caviar, too.
What was it?
A filet mignon with sauce béarnaise and a green salad. And then... then a chocolate souffle.
Did we by any chance have pink champagne as well?
Yes, I believe we did.
You will see in a moment with what nostalgic charm history can repeat itself.
Oh, Hugo, I don't believe you're really old at all.
Avanti.
Good evening, madame.
Good evening.
The table in the usual place, sir.
Yes, please, Felix.
This chair, madame.
Thank you.
You can leave the vodka. We will serve ourselves.
Bien, monsieur.
How handsome he is, isn't he? Oh, Greek or Italian?
Half Italian and half Austrian, I believe.
He has just a slight look of my first husband, Peter. Poor Peter. His feet trod the world lightly and, alas, all too briefly.
He was the one who was killed in an aeroplane?
Yes. He was studying to be a pilot in San Diego. I was trying out a new play in San Francisco. They had the sense not to tell me until after the matinee.
How dreadful for you.
Yes. It was my first real sorrow. We'd only been married for 18 months, too soon for the gold to rub away. Then, a little while afterwards, I had a miscarriage. That was my second real sorrow. It was quite a year. San Francisco is a divine city, and I love it, but I always seem to have bad luck when I play there. In 1957, I lost my last remaining tooth at the Curran Theatre.
Chocolata!
It was a gallant old stump that held my lower plate together. I remember saying to my understudy one day, "Lily, when this is out, you're on." And sure enough, a week later, it was, and she was.
I don't wish to sound fussy, Carlotta, but I really don't care to discuss false teeth during dinner.
Why ever not? That's when they're a force most to be reckoned with.
Nevertheless, I should welcome a change of subject.
Oh, dear Hugo, I am so sorry. I remember now you always hated spades being called spades. What shall we talk about? Perhaps you would like some further vignettes from my rather ramshackle career.
Provided that they are general rather than clinical.
Well, let me see now. My second husband, Vernon Ritchie, was my leading man in a ghastly play about the Deep South, which ran for ages.
Was he a good actor?
No, terrible. But he made up for his performances on the stage by his performances in the boudoir. I didn't say bed in order to spare your feelings.
Thank you. I appreciate your delicacy.
He was a sweet man, and I was very fond of him. He was the father of my son David, and then, soon after Pearl Harbor, when the war came to us in America, he joined the Navy and was killed in the Pacific in 1944.
Was that another great sorrow?
No. Just sadness.
What decided you to make your life in America rather than in Europe, where you were born?
Because I happened to be there, I suppose. I went there originally on account of you. It was your play, if you remember, that first deposited me on the Great White Way, where it ran exactly 10 days.
That was no surprise to me. I never thought they'd understand it.
Do you know, Hugo, I have a terrible feeling that they did.
Let me help you to some more caviar.
Thank you.
And you never appeared in the London Theatre since my first play?
Yes, twice.
I don't remember hearing about it.
Why should you? As a matter of fact, on each occasion you were away, in the Far East, I believe, on one of your excavating expeditions.
Excavating expeditions?
Yes, digging for treasure trove in the trusting mines of the innocent.
You have a malicious tongue, Carlotta.
Yes, I really should learn to keep it between my false teeth. Let's stop talking about me now. Tell me about Hilda.
I really see no reason to discuss Hilda with you.
Oh, your loyal reticence does you credit, but it is a little overdone, almost defensive. After all, I'm not a newspaper reporter.
You might easily be, judging by the tastelessness of some of your questions.
It's no use trying to intimidate me, Hugo, because it won't work. If you remember, it never did work. You have asked me questions about my husband's, and I didn't snap your head off. Why shouldn't I ask you about your wife?
The analogy is a trifle strained.
I truly want to know. Not from idle curiosity, but because I liked her. She has wisdom and repose, and her eyes are kind. A little sad, perhaps, but kind. I suspect tragedy in her life.
Well, you're right. There was tragedy in her life. She managed to escape from Nazi Germany in 1940, soon after the phony war began. She left behind the love of her life, a young poet called Gerhard Händel. He died 2 years later in a concentration camp. Now, are you satisfied?
Satisfied is not quite the word I would have chosen. But I am pleased that you told me.
Am I too early, sir?
No, we've quite finished. You'd better open the wine.
Bien, monsieur.
Champagne? Oh, Hugo, I have a feeling it's going to be pink.
It is.
How disarming of you to be so sentimental.
The champagne is excellent.
Do you remember the cottage at Taplone, driving down together on summer nights after the show?
Yes. Yes, I remember. Oh,
and how cross you were that night at the Grafton Galleries when I appeared in a red sequin frock that Baby Bryant had lent me. You said I looked like a Shaftesbury Avenue tart.
You did.
Oh, and the weekend we went to Paris, and I got back to the theatre on the Monday night exactly 7 minutes before curtain time. My understudy was all dressed and ready to go on. I often wonder why you didn't write any more plays. Your dialogue was so pointed and witty.
You flatter me, Carlotta.
I've read everything you've ever written.
You flatter me more than ever.
I only said that I'd read everything you've ever written. I ventured no opinion, flattering or otherwise.
The statement alone is flattering enough.
Yes. Yes, I expect it is. I suppose Ciro's isn't there any more.
Lots of things aren't there any more.
How right you are, Hugo. How right you are. Oh, dear.
That was a pensive sigh.
I've been in America too long. It's so lovely to see a steak that doesn't look like a bedroom slipper.
Tout va bien, monsieur.
Oui, excellent. Merci, Félix.
À votre service, monsieur.
He really is most attractive, isn't he? Those glorious shoulders.
I've never noticed them.
They're probably padded, anyhow. Life can be dreadfully treacherous.
You really are extraordinary, Carlotta. You don't look a day over 50.
Oh, I should hope not. After 3 cellular injections and 2 facelifts?
Oh, Carlotta!
It's wonderful how they do it. Now you can hardly see the scars at all.
What on earth possessed you to tell me that?
Oh, dear. Now I've shocked you again.
Aesthetically, yes, you have.
I am sorry. Just as we were making such progress.
As the object of such operations is presumably to create an illusion, why destroy the illusion by telling everybody about it?
Quite right, Hugo. As a matter of fact, you could do with a little snip yourself, just under the chin. It would do wonders for your morale.
My morale is perfectly satisfactory as it is, thank you.
Long may it remain so.
Why did you come here, Carlotta?
I told you, I'm having a course of injections at Professor Boramelli's clinique.
Professor Boramelli?
Yes. Do you know him?
I know of him.
You look disapproving.
His reputation is rather dubious.
In what way?
The general consensus of opinion is that he is a quack.
Oh. Quack or no quack, he's an old duck.
Don't be foolish, Carlotta.
There's no need to stamp on my little joke as though it were a cockroach.
Well, I'm still waiting to hear the reason that induced you suddenly to make this, shall we say, rather tardy reappearance in my life. It must be a fairly strong one.
Not so very strong, really. It's only actually an irrelevant little favour. Irrelevant to you, I mean, but important to me.
What is it?
Prepare yourself for a tiny shock.
I'm quite prepared. Go on.
I, too, have written an autobiography.
Have you? How interesting.
There's a distinct chill in your voice.
I'm sorry, I was unaware of it.
It is to be published in the autumn.
Congratulations. Who by?
Doubleday in New York and Heinemann in London.
Excellent.
I'm so glad you approve.
And have you written it all yourself, or have you employed what I believe is described as a ghost writer?
No, Hugo. I have written every word of it myself.
Well done.
On an electric typewriter. You really should try one. It's a godsend.
I have no need of it. Hilda does my typing for me.
Of course, yes, I'd forgotten. Then you can give her one for a birthday present.
I suppose you want me to write an introductory preface.
No, I've already done that myself.
What is it, then? What is it you want of me?
Permission to publish your letters.
Letters? What letters?
The letters you wrote to me when we were lovers. I've kept them all.
Whatever letters I wrote to you at that time were private. They concerned no one but you and me.
I agree, but that was a long time ago, before we'd either of us become celebrated enough to write our memoirs.
I cannot feel that you, Carlotta, have even yet achieved that particular distinction.
Doubleday and Heinemann do.
I believe that some years ago Mrs. Patrick Campbell made a similar request to Mr. George Bernard Shaw, and his reply was, "Certainly not, I have no intention of playing the horse to your Lady Godiva."
How unkind!
It would ill become me to attempt to improve on Mr. George Bernard Shaw.
You mean you refuse?
Certainly. I most emphatically refuse.
I thought you would.
In that case, surely it was a waste of time to take the trouble to ask me.
I just took a chance. After all, life can be full of surprises sometimes, can't it?
If your forthcoming autobiography is to be peppered with that sort of bromide, it cannot fail to achieve the bestseller list.
You can turn nasty quickly, can't you? You were quite cozy and relaxed a moment ago.
I am completely horrified by your suggestion. It is in the worst possible taste.
Perfect timing, Felix. I congratulate you.
Thank you, madame.
Ah, the lake is like glass. There'll be a moon presently.
How clever of you to know.
There was a moon last night. I just put two and two together. Sir Hugo tells me that you are half Austrian and half Italian, Felix.
That is correct, madame.
Which half do you like best?
Please, Carlotta.
I find the two perfectly satisfactory, madame.
I expect both the waltz and the tarantella come quite naturally to you.
That will be all for the moment, Felix. Please, bring the coffee immediately.
Subito, signore.
Chocolate souffle.
I hate familiarity with servants.
Oh, eat up your souffle, for God's sake, and stop being so disagreeable.
How dare you speak to me like that?
There, really, Hugo. What have I to fear from you?
I consider your rudeness insufferable.
And I consider your pomposity insufferable.
I should like to remind you that you are my guest.
Of course I am. Don't be so silly.
And as such, I have the right to demand from you at least a semblance of good manners.
Semblance of good manners. Talk about cliches. That's a clanger if ever I heard one.
Once and for all, Carlotta.
For heaven's sakes, calm down. Your wife told me earlier on that it was bad for you to overexcite yourself. You'll have a fit in a minute if you don't stop gibbering.
I am not gibbering. I think, Carlotta, that as we really haven't very much more to say to each other, it would be considerate of you to leave as soon as you've finished eating. I am sorry if I appear to be discourteous, but after all, it was you who forced us both into this rather unprofitable meeting. I have done my best to receive you kindly and make the evening a pleasant one. That I have failed is only too obvious. I am sorry also that I was unable to accede to your request. I am sure, after you have given yourself time to think it over, that you will realize how impertinent it was.
Why impertinent?
Not having read your book, I have naturally no way of judging whether it is good, bad, or indifferent. I am perfectly aware, however, that whatever its merits, the inclusion of private letters from a man in my position would enhance its value considerably. The impertinence, I think, lies in your assuming for a moment that I should grant you permission to publish them. We met and parted many years ago. Since then, we have neither of us communicated with each other. You have pursued your career, I have pursued mine. Mine, if I may say so without undue arrogance, has been eminently successful, yours perhaps less so. Doesn't it strike you as impertinent that after so long a silence, you should suddenly ask me to provide you with my name as a stepping stone?
The letters really are very good, Hugo. It's disappointing that you won't allow me to use them. They are love letters, of course, up to a point, and brilliantly written. The more ardent passages are exquisitely phrased, although they do give the impression that they were commissioned by your head rather than dictated by your heart.
I have no wish to discuss the matter any further.
It seems a pity that posterity should be deprived of such an illuminating example of your earlier work.
I really am very tired, Carlotta. I feel that my age entitles me to ask you to leave me alone now. Perhaps we may meet and talk again within the next few days.
Good night, then, Hugo. I am sorry the evening has ended so uncozily.
So am I, Carlotta. So am I.
To revert for a moment to the unfortunate subject of the letters, you may have them if you like. They are of no further use to me.
That is most generous of you.
I'm afraid I can't let you have the others, though. I would be betraying a sacred promise.
Others? What others?
Your letters to Perry.
My letters to Perry? What do you mean?
Perry Sheldon. I happened to be with him when he died.
What do you know about Perry Sheldon?
Among other things, that he was the only true love of your life. Good night, Hugo. Sleep well.
You are listening to the Santa Barbara Theater of the Air.
Please tune in next week for the conclusion of Noel Coward's A Song at Twilight.